This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
My name is Rob St. George from LGIM, and today I am joined by three very special guests. First, we have Dr. Wyatt Newman.
Hi, Rob. Pleasure to be here.
Wyatt is a leading researcher in the areas of mechatronics, robotics, and computational intelligence. In these areas, Wyatt has 12 patents and over 130 technical publications. Wyatt is also an active member of the RoboGlobal Strategic Advisory Board. Also joining us from RoboGlobal, we have Richard Lightbound, CEO for EMEA and Asia. Richard, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rob.
And RoboGlobal's Director of Research, Jeremy Capron. Jeremy, thank you for joining us.
Hello, thank you.
Our topic today is the intersection of robotics and artificial intelligence, in which, Wyatt, you are a well-regarded expert. Now, Wyatt, I think in the popular imagination, robots have been viewed primarily as industrial machines or even toys. Is that still true today, or are the applications far broader?
Well, that's rapidly changing. If you look at where robots have traditionally been deployed, primarily it's been in the automotive sector, where they've done repetitive tasks, reprogrammed only rarely, typically once a year. And that was never intended from the beginning to be the primary application of robots. But what's held them back really is the robot brains. And more recently, we've seen dramatic improvements in artificial intelligence, which is enabling robots to be situated in locations not so structured. So in environments that are built for people instead of environments that are built for machines.
Mm. Now, I've heard you speak in the past about something you called robotics depression. What helped the industry overcome that phase of depression and negativity towards robots?
Yes, it has been a long depression. As a career-long roboticist, it was a difficult time. And so it's particularly exciting now to see the revival. And the revival has waited for a culmination of multiple influences. So we needed certainly improvements in the mechanisms, which has been steady and impressive. But we've also needed improvements in sensors, and now we have what are highly capable and increasingly low-cost 3D sensors that are helpful. And there has importantly been development of what is a standard robot programming environment, the robot operating system. And so that is truly accelerating how fast robots are developing. Put all that together with the new AI, and we have much more capable machines. So these are events that have taken quite a while to come to this level of development, and it needed the simultaneity of all of those in order to prepare us for this fourth industrial revolution.
Mm. And you mentioned AI there and how that's contributing to this revolution. We know also that companies like Google and Facebook are gathering ever greater amounts of data about us and how we live and how we work. How is that data mining feeding into this revolution?
Well, that's a tremendous important part of the new AI. So the new AI primarily is also by the buzzword deep learning, which is a method of training rather than programming systems. And so the training requires a tremendous volume of labeled data. And so at present, those who hold the largest banks of big data are leaders in this AI. And so that includes Google and Facebook and Amazon. However, it's spreading more broadly because you can acquire your own data through the internet, and you can also generate your own data virtually through simulations. So it really is becoming more accessible. It's also accessible in terms of the specialists. If the field were choked down to a handful of gurus of AI, then we would not see the widespread that we see. Rather, it's quite approachable. So the software is out there. Most of it is free and open source. There are tutorials, and it's not difficult to learn. So I think that we'll have a broad enough, well-trained workforce to be able to deploy these systems.
Mm. So that wealth of data is helping AI develop. The other great technology trend we're seeing is the rollout of 5G. How is 5G helping accelerate the application of all this data science and robotics engineering?
Well, the availability of high-speed communications certainly will make more of the AI and robotics accessible to the whole world, as opposed to those who have highly advanced infrastructure. So that will be a benefit. We'll also be much more connected so that wherever you are, you'll be able to access high-powered cloud computing and large data sets. So we'll be more plugged in than ever before.
Mm. Now, that all sounds very, very positive. But I suppose one concern would be that as robots become more capable, they could start taking more and more jobs from people. Are you concerned about any collapse in employment created by this robotics revolution?
Yeah, I think that's a very genuine concern. Historically, if we look at what has happened with the introduction of new technology, we ultimately emerge on the other side with a higher quality of life. But also with dramatic change, and with change there is inevitably pain. And we do need to consider the difficulty of that transition and on whom it falls. Right? So hopefully we will plan ahead and we'll distribute the cost of the change equitably. But that will take a much broader effort.
Mm. And then are there any specific areas that are applying AI and robotics right now that really excite you and really make you feel enthusiastic about the future of these industries?
Yes, I think one of the most exciting concepts in AI right now is the ability to embed concepts and words in a fashion that makes it computable. Now, we know that through the existence of our own brains and tearing those apart and looking at, oh, this is a connection of neurons connected with axons and dendrites through synapses, that this is the computing machinery. And somehow in there we get feelings and consciousness and understanding, which have never really been computable concepts before. And we're right on the cusp of embedding these types of concepts of meaning inside of computation. So computers are getting closer and closer to literally understanding what they read. Of course, they read blindingly fast, you know, much faster than a human could attempt to consume in a lifetime compared to seconds on a computer. But what do they understand from it? And now we're getting to the point where we'll start using the expression the computer understands what it's reading. And when that happens, we'll see breakthroughs in, common tasks such as doing patent searches and legal searches, doing medical diagnostics, doing news filtering, doing stock picking. So we will see much more capable cognition out of this. And so it's an exciting time for that.
Mm, thank you. Now, Richard and Jeremy, we just mentioned stock picking. It's part of your job to turn these exciting developments into investable strategies. First of all, how do you go about doing that? How do you take the cutting edge research happening in labs and begin to think about ways that people can invest in those trends?
Yes. Yeah, so at RoboGlobal, we're a very research-driven organization, and we're fortunate to work not only with investment professionals, research analysts, portfolio managers, but also with a fantastic team of industry experts like Professor Newman and a number of others from places like MIT, Berkeley, Stanford, and many others. So we try to incorporate both an investment perspective and a strong technology perspective. And I think it's important because if you look at the current state of the market, majority of participants are very short-term oriented, and we take the long-term view. We can afford to take the long-term perspective, and I think that's a strong advantage. So we do technology research. We try to understand what are the core enabling technologies that make robots and AI possible. And then we're also very interested in the companies that deploy robotics and AI across a variety of markets and industries, spanning manufacturing, of course. Professor Newman was just talking about how robotics is still primarily in the manufacturing world, but clearly robots are coming out of the factory floor and they are changing the game in nearly every economic sector. So healthcare, food and agriculture, defense, logistics, and many other areas. So we look around the world for best-in-class companies that participate in this technology revolution.
And now we discussed both robotics and artificial intelligence, which you have managed to separate into two separate investment themes. How do you go about ensuring that both are pure exposures to those themes and there isn't too much overlap between the two?
Thanks, Rob. So 6 years ago, we actually started looking originally at robotics and automation. And really what led us sort of on that journey was a very early conviction that this was an important and investable theme. There was a significant sort of opportunity there. But as we started to sort of dig into the opportunity, we realized very quickly that it was certainly global, as Jeremy was just saying, but it was also highly unstructured. You know, there wasn't that sort of perfect database of robotics, automation, and even AI companies out there, and hence that approach of combining investment professionals with the sort of the research experts we've got on the advisory board. So the initial focus was all about robotics and automation. And again, as Jeremy was describing, a big part of that was not just owning sort of areas of society where you see the robots deployed. So again, factory robots, warehouse robots, surgical robots. For us, the opportunity was also to own core components of the supply chain, so key areas of technology. So that led us towards different types of sensing technologies. It led us towards machine learning and artificial intelligence. So we've always covered artificial intelligence within our robotics and automation strategy as really a sort of a key enabling technology. But as the years progressed, it just became very clear that there was an opportunity to almost take a much broader look at artificial intelligence and really apply a very similar recipe to what was very successful with robotics and automation. So, again, continue to engage with our industry experts, build an in-house customized roadmap or industry classification, map out different subsectors where we wanted to create exposure, create a set of rules and filters to help us as a research group then navigate through the database.
Mm. And you mentioned there your advisory board. How do you work with these leading academic practitioners? What kind of insights are you able to get from them that we couldn't otherwise obtain?
I think we're very fortunate, first of all, to be able to work with this sort of a group. I mean, having this sort of access is phenomenal for us. And I think there's a number of ways that we work together. So certainly in terms of looking forward and understanding a lot of this technology, talking about the companies, identifying who are the market, the technology leaders within a particular subsector. That's very valuable input that we'll get from the advisors. If we're trying to make contact with a company, we want to talk to the CEO. If we can't get access for some reason, a company CEO anywhere in the world would take a telephone call very quickly from one of our advisors. And then I think thirdly, there's a lot of education still with these themes. So, we spend a good amount of time with the advisors out in front of the investment community, just talking about what's happening, why it's important to pay attention to it, how you might want to think about these themes as investors.
Mm. And when you speak to these investors, and this is to all of you, what kind of interest are you seeing in these themes and how are people applying them in their portfolios?
I think it's still very early days. The reality is that the investment community is not prepared to what's coming. I said earlier, this is a technology revolution. You have to think about it as a comparable to that of the internet or electricity in the beginning of the 20th century. And those technology revolution create enormous amounts of wealth. If you were positioned correctly 20 years ago to capture what happened with the internet, it's probably the sweetest spot in the market for many years. And we think that's what's coming with robotics and AI. Yet, if you look at what's on offer in the market in terms of investment vehicles to capture that, it's still very, very limited. The assets that are allocated towards this is still ridiculously small. So yes, there's plenty of tech funds out there. They're primarily geared to the software industry, and we think robotics AI is where they should be.
Mm. And within the indices that you construct, how do you go about balancing the young companies that are driving progress in these areas alongside, say, the companies that are benefiting from the cost savings that they create, as well as avoiding the companies that are being disrupted by this revolution?
I think that's a very important question. Innovation is happening at both large and small companies. And in many cases, there's a lot of action in the small and mid-cap space. There's action in terms of innovation. There's also, faster growth, revenue growth, and profit growth. And there's also a lot of M&A action. Since we started the Robo Index and the ETFs that track it, we've seen more than 10 takeovers. So that's supportive of investment performance. I think it's also interesting that when you look at AI, it's almost like a barbell. You've got on one side the big firms and the usual suspects like Google, Facebook, and Baidu and the likes. That are driving investments into AI, R&D, et cetera. In fact, the bats and the fangs probably account for around 50% of investment dollars going towards AI. But the remaining, the other half, is going to hundreds of much younger, much smaller companies, very innovative and primarily funded by venture capital. Those companies will ultimately come to the public markets, and you want to be prepared to get exposure to them.
Mm. And you mentioned Baidu there, which I think is an important point, because this isn't simply a Silicon Valley story, is it? If I can ask you Wyatt, where in the world are you seeing the most exciting and interesting progress occurring?
Well, what makes that question difficult is how broad-based it is. One of the keys, I think, is the existence of the open source software and online tutorials. People are training themselves how to make these AI systems. So it's extremely accessible. So some kid in his basement or some giant corporation, it's almost a level playing field that way. So we'll see surprises come out, which is, I think, part of what I find appealing about a thematic fund. It's hard to know who will be the winners and the losers. But it's fairly easy to say this area of robotics and AI is certain to be important in the future. And overall, it's a good place to put your attention.
Mm, absolutely. And also, you mentioned the kids in the basements who are doing their own work on these kinds of areas. So how do you go about determining whether a new technology, a new advance is commercially likely to be successful versus just interesting on a kind of abstract level?
Yeah, well, part of what Robo looks for is the company's commitment to robotics and AI. It's tempting, and many companies will just put big data in front of their name or IoT, and their stock goes up because they put a buzzword there. But you have to dig deeper to say, are you actually committed to it? Are you investing in it? And some will work and some will don't, but we believe that if there is that commitment to it, that collectively the entire theme will rise.
Can you point to any areas in our everyday life where AI is changing how we do things without us necessarily realizing it?
Well, we've certainly become accustomed to using search engines, right? So arguments get ended much more quickly when you Google it. We're accustomed to knowing how to navigate with, here is our map, here's the best way to get there. You can find what you're looking for, not just by stumbling onto it, but you can say, this is just the restaurant that I want to go to in the neighborhood that I want to go to. And increasingly, we'll see autonomous vehicles as well. That will change our lives, right? So your commute will turn into perhaps more rest time or reading time. I think that will improve the quality of our lives while hopefully at the same time reducing traffic holdups as well as reducing fatalities. So overall, I think our lives will be improved with all of that information getting to us.
Mm, thank you, Wyatt. So I think we've covered both the high-level academic applications of this revolution and some of the ways we think about them as investors. So if I could just go around the three of you and ask you to summarize briefly what you think investors need to take away from this conversation. If I can start with you, Richard, what's the key point in this conversation for investors?
Yeah, I mean, one of our key messages, even 6 years ago was that, these are for investors very important themes. You need to pay attention to them. You need to be allocating towards them. But what's been extraordinary for us as, we've been, continuing to you know, research, not just robotics and automation, but also artificial intelligence, is, you know, watching a lot of other entrants come into the marketplace, which is good. It validates the theme for investors. It gives them a choice. But, you know, what we've noticed is just how different the strategies are. So, again, I think it's important for investors to pay attention, but also just to educate themselves and just sort of, you know, pay attention to why and how these different strategies are different.
Thank you. And similarly to you, Wyatt, what one thing do investors need to know about the robotics and AI revolution?
Well, one of the important things to try to determine is the difference between what is a bubble and what is a sea change. And robotics has gone up and down, and AI has gone up and down. But from my perspective as a researcher in the field, this is a fundamental change. This is here to stay. It will change our lives. It will persist. I think it's something to hang your hat on.
Thank you. And Jeremy, again, for investors, what do they need to bear in mind about this opportunity?
I'll make two points here. First, it is not a bubble. And second, it is not a niche. I hear a lot of investors argue that robotics is a very small piece of the technology market. As I said, robots are becoming increasingly pervasive in all aspects of our lives, in all industries, in all markets. This is a general purpose technology, much bigger than most investors tend to think at first sight. Second, it is not a bubble. These are real business, in many cases, excellent businesses from a margin and a return on investment, return on capital perspective. They're fast growing. If you look under the hood at some of the index and portfolio characteristics, you'll find double-digit revenue growth at the median. These are not hot, high-flying tech stocks on ridiculous multiples. In fact, the forward PE on the Robo Index today stands around 22, 23 times. So you've got strong earnings growth at a reasonable price. I think I'll leave it here.
Gentlemen, thank you for this discussion today. Well, we've heard about the journey investors can go on from the lab to the stock exchange. We've heard how AI and robotics is going to change every aspect of how we live and work. And if you would like to read more about Robo's work and insights from Elgin, please do click on the links in the show notes to read the latest comments from both Robo and from Elgin. Thank you very much for listening.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.